Hey everybody, it's Nancy here from American Pet Professionals, and we are on our teleseminar this week with Sharina Anke-Kroll of Anke-Kroll Law, being here for a teleseminar on trademark and copyright law for the pet industry. Sharina, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be able to do this.
Yeah, I'm excited that you're here. So just to tell our listeners at first, this teleseminar is for informational purposes only, and it is not to be taken as legal advice. So just so we get that out of the way, since it is about copyright and trademark law, it's good to talk about that. So, Sharina, can I ask what drew you to practice this area of law?
I always loved having pets around ever since I was a little kid. And when I started my own practice about 3 years ago, I really wanted to combine my passion for the pet industry and the pet world along with my business. So that's how I came to focus on the pet industry.
I love that. That's so cool. And as you know, as you can see on a daily basis, there can be some confusion for small business owners in the pet industry as you're practicing your law. I'm sure you get a ton of questions. And what they need to have trademark, registered, and copyright, what the difference is, and how important it is to do so to protect your business. I often get asked by my members of American Pet Professionals what they should trademark, how much it costs, what the procedure is, can they do it themselves, and so on. I always suggest contact a lawyer. But let's start with a basic question. Can you explain what a trademark is and what it means to be registered?
Sure. So a trademark, simply put, is the mark of your goods. It's the mark that distinguishes your goods from the goods of another. And on the same token, a service mark is a mark that distinguishes your services from the services of someone else. For example, UPS versus DHL or FedEx, they're not providing any goods. They're providing the service of moving and delivering your item to someone else. And, of course, we have great pet products out there, and everyone has their business names, logos, and any sort of other marks that they would use to distinguish their products from someone else's. That would be something you would be able to trademark. So it's business names, logos, and also slogans if you have one, like Just Do It in Nike, that's a slogan. So if you have any of those three things, you can trademark those.
That's great. And I'm just going to go back quickly. The service mark, what does that look like? It's not the R, is it?
No. So the service mark is SM. And as you guys may know, the trademark is TM.
TM,
however,
right.
Right. The R can only be used once your service mark or trademark has been registered with the USPTO. So until you have the mark registered, either service mark or trademark, you cannot use the R in a circle.
That's really great. See, I already learned something. I have seen the SM. It was never in my realm. So I have the TM and the R. But that's really cool. And that might be even a good thing for maybe pet sitters or other pet service industry professionals that have something that, you know, they offer that is either new or unique or different that nobody else is doing.
Right.
Potentially. Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't even think of that.
In order to use the TM or the SM, you don't have to be registered. It's automatic. As soon as you start using it in connection to your business, you can start putting the TM or SM next to your business name, logo, or slogan.
That's really cool. Okay, so one of the questions my members had asked me for this teleseminar is, what is the easiest and least expensive way to trademark their organization's or business name?
So that's a question that I often get asked by people looking to protect themselves but don't necessarily have a ton of money to pay for a lawyer. However, if you're really looking to save money in the long run, it's best to hire someone to do the work for you who has been doing it for a while, and they do it on a daily basis. So although it may look like, you know, someone can do it correctly, but it's a pretty intricate process, and if something goes wrong, then you have to hire someone like a lawyer, and then it ends up costing a lot more because then it usually becomes an hourly rate instead of a flat fee.
Right.
So I would say the most cost-effective and time-efficient way of dealing with this would be to hire an attorney. And I'm not just saying that because I am one. I'm saying it because, you know, it just gives you a peace of mind knowing that, you know, your project or your deal is being handled by someone who is a professional in that particular field.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I don't disagree at all. I think if you're going to do something and you have a business, you know, you need to do it the proper way. And, you know, it's not even just the fact that you're a lawyer, but any lawyer that is trained and has been doing this for years should be the person you speak to, because you might be able to figure it out, but like you said, if something goes wrong or you don't do it the proper way, or maybe you forgot to look this up, whatever, then you have a problem. And I've known, sadly, a few people that didn't do it the right way, and then they did have to change the name of their business and all of their marketing materials, and that ended up costing them a heck of a lot more money than if they had just gone with a lawyer in the beginning and did it the proper way. So it's very true.
Right, and just like you have mentioned, that the worst thing is not that you will even end up spending a lot more if you do it incorrectly in the first place. The worst that can happen is that you will have to rebrand your entire business, because if someone else steals your name or, you know, any of your business identity, like the logo, for example, then it's kind of too late, because as soon as someone registers that mark, the presumption is that that person is the person that originally had it. So unless you have very deep pockets to fight something like that, it's really not worth it.
Yeah, I agree. So what about if a trademarked pet business has products? Can they be included under the same trademark, or does each product have to be registered separately? So say I have a product company that their name, logo, and everything and slogan is trademarked and registered, and then they have a product that they come out with that, you know, is becoming a big hit and they want that registered. Can it be under the same thing, or is it separate?
That's a great question. Trademarks are protected by class. And by that, it simply means that classes are pretty much categories. So let's say your business sells pet accessories such as, I don't know, like hair clips for female dogs. And, you know, down the line, you want to also start selling food for your business within the same business name. So what you would have to do is you would have to apply for two separate classes. They wouldn't protect you automatically for the food just because you're registered for the accessory.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So that makes sense. So I think a lot of that is misunderstood. People thinking, well, I have a trademark, everything should be covered, when it's not. That's
right.
I've definitely gotten that question before, and I'm like, I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think so. You know.
You're like, absolutely correct.
Yeah. Yeah. So how about this? This is a pretty interesting question. This was one from one of our members in Chicago, actually, that makes dog food, and she has a lot of stuff, trademarks and stuff, but she said, can she trademark something like a dog food recipe or a treat line? Can those be protected as well? And like you just explained, she would have to go through the different classes, but How can a dog food recipe, or can it be trademarked or registered?
So the recipe itself would not be able to get a trademark, because it wouldn't really distinguish her business from someone else's. So now we're talking about copyright law. So copyright protects all original works of authorship, and that would fall under copyright law, not trademark law.
Oh, okay. So there's a way to go around it. It's a little bit different, but okay. So speaking of copyright law, personally, I've actually registered written work with the Copyright Office to protect a program I was offering. I had a couple of different documents submitted and got to pay the money. I don't remember what it was, $35 or $50 or whatever.
Right.
It was still stolen by somebody that came to my class. Basically took my program, stolen verbatim, and this is a few years ago. And I let them know, you know, it was copyrighted. And, I mean, they literally copied my flyer. They copied the program, everything. And it was a dog training class. It was really ridiculous. If they didn't cease using my work, what have my next steps would have been? Like, if they continued, I think they only hosted two of the classes that I was doing. What should I have had to hire a lawyer, or was there another way to do it?
Well, first, you don't really have to hire an attorney if they're friendly and if they actually listen and back off. So
right.
Usually what happens is, you know, you would send them a written letter of some sort saying, you know, this is my product or this is my work and it's copyright protected and I need you to stop using it. So usually people back off once they figure out that, okay, they know that I'm copying their work. And if they don't, at that point, most of the time, people would hire an attorney because they can send a cease and desist letter asking them to stop. So it's almost like a tiered process. You go to the next step if, you know, the
right.
first one doesn't work. And if they don't even stop after receiving the cease and desist letter, you can start a lawsuit. And basically, there are statutory damages, meaning if you have a registration number for copyright, there
right.
are damages that are statutorily available. So you wouldn't even have to prove your damages as much as you would in other cases, other civil litigation cases. Some of the damages are already available to you just by virtue of having a registration number.
Wow, I didn't even know that. I just knew that. I just had a feeling that that program was going to be copied if I didn't copyright it. And they did actually back down and they didn't offer it. But that's really interesting. That's really good information. You know, and I think speaking of copyright, people don't think, you know, if they have, you know, you think when you open a book and you flip through and you see the copyright seal, but then we have blogging and all the stuff that we have these days that, you know, social media, people don't think about what is copyrighted and what isn't.
Right.
And I think, you know, as far as social media goes, nobody, you know, if somebody's looking for a photo or content, you know, I think they go to Google as their own personal photo library, and they don't
right.
realize they can't steal those photos. I'm like, no, you can't take that off of Google, you know. And I see some people, they'll take it off of Google, and maybe they'll credit the photographer. That's like the most I've ever seen. But, you know, I've had my own photos that I use for promotional use for my business and so forth stolen, used without permission countless times. And now I have to watermark all my photos, and it's really time-consuming, and it still doesn't stop everyone. Is there a suggestion that you'd have for professional pet photographers to help protect their work or anybody using content or anything along those lines as far as copywriting goes?
Sure. So just to start off that discussion, copyright actually exists from the moment that a work is transferred into a tangible medium. So as soon as you take a photograph, it's already copyrighted to you.
Right.
However, how do you prove that? Especially in this day and age where everything is pretty much online and, you know, it's just all over the place, like you said.
Right.
So the best thing to do is to register your work once again. I know it seems very tedious and, you know, almost, you know, impossible because we have Instagram, we have Twitter, we have Facebook.
Right.
But if you really think that, you know, your work is worth fighting over, then you really should be taking these precautions because when push comes to shove, they will be asking you for a registration number if in case it gets up to the point that there is litigation.
Right. Wow. So, yeah, so even watermarking it, you know, isn't even the best. And I know that, you know, and some photos that I use, I don't care about that one. But then there's ones that I take and then I'm like, I have to watermark it. And then, of course, there's photos that I take from some of my clients and I just give them the photos and those I don't care about. But,
right.
You know, I've seen it with content. I mean, I've been plagiarized. I've had stuff taken right off some of my blog posts with no
mm-hmm.
credit back. And I'm always just kind of like, really? So that's really interesting to know that you would have to register it ahead of time to protect yourself, even though,
right.
like you said, it's, once you take the photo, it's your photo. But still, if it's something that you're using for your business, I think it's really important to register it.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, did I cut you off?
Nope. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say that I have had instances where my clients have been accused of stealing someone's copyrighted material. And the first thing I ask for is the registration number because you never know if they're just trying to intimidate you just by saying, oh,
right.
it's copyright protected, when really they stole it either from you or someone else. So that's really just the litmus test for seeing if something is really if something really belongs to you.
Right. It's kind of like the first step, the first question you ask.
Right.
It's really interesting. I've also had another, you know, another example of somebody that if they, because they didn't, and this is kind of a different extreme, but they had a franchise of a pet business that they had bought into, and the franchise, after a couple of months, went belly up, and the, here they are with their brand new business. So, oh my God, now they have this franchise, they don't have a backup, but there were other franchises, and this was a pet industry type of place. The other franchises, they none of them had copyright to the actual franchise name. The franchise owner had it, but since they went belly up, they didn't do anything to protect their franchisees. And another person that owned one of the places, like in I don't know what state it was, sued, told everybody else they'd be sued if they didn't change the name of their franchise. So this person, because she bought into a franchise, had to then completely rebrand and rechange everything. It ended up, in my opinion, working out better for her because now I'm like, now you're not tied to the franchise. You can do your own thing, which she is doing, and she's been very successful. But, I mean, that was a hugely eye-opening thing, and I'm like, wow, I'm like, that's crazy. So how would somebody protect themselves in that kind of situation? Would you know? Would you have any idea?
When a trademark is not registered and you buy into a business?
Yeah, or just a buy into a franchise, and if you don't, you, it's not your, you know, you don't own that because the other person does, but then they went belly up.
Right. So it will all depend on the contract that you end up signing when you take over a franchise or any other business. And that is a point I was going to make later, that people don't really think about the increase in a selling cost when you are selling your business. If you have your intellectual property all protected, you can actually get more money to sell your business. Because, you know, a competent buyer would ask, okay, well, is your name protected? Will I be getting some sort of notification for cease and desist for using this name or this logo? Because what you're buying along with the inventory of a business most of the time is the reputation. And your reputation can only be protected by intellectual property law.
That's really a fantastic point. I mean, if you're selling a business, say you any kind of business, and if you have everything done already, that's a huge point to say in selling your business. And like you said, make more money because that's such an ease of, you know, put somebody at peace of mind that's buying the business, that all the ducks are in the row with that. That's a really great point.
Right. And in addition to that, if you don't want to sell your intellectual property with your business property, you can then license your intellectual property. You can license your business name. You can say, I'm not selling the name. You know, I'm literally just giving you the business assets, and this is not part of it. So you can get more money that way as well.
That's really a really great point. I didn't even realize that or think of that. I actually have another question about business names, and this is pet industry names. I know when you go and you register your name and then you get it, you know, if you get it trademarked and everything, you know, I see a lot of very similar names in the pet industry. There's a situation here on Long Island where I am, and a boutique owner that has had the name for, I think, 12 years. I don't know if it's registered or not. She bought the business. And another boutique opened up like two towns over with the same name. And I'm like, how do they do that? And they actually know about the other business. They've been there. I'm like, what does the person that originally had the name do then? I mean, maybe it's off by like one thing, but it's really the same name. And I'm like, that's really confusing to people that live locally because they might think it's the same shop and it's not.
So in that case, okay, so just to clarify before I even get into it, so when you open a business, let's say it's an LLC or a corporation, the state may grant something very, very similar because that is completely separate from a trademark.
Right,
that's probably why they're able to open it without any objections from the state. However, if the original business owner did not have a trademark already for his name, and the second one went in and trademarked their name, the first, the original guy will have some issues with the federal trademark. He's not going to get that. So, you know, it's very, very important. You just don't know who you're coming across. And the issue here is that it's almost like a double-edged sword, is that you want to be known for your brand. So as soon as you become known, you have a lot of people watching you to steal ideas from you. And oftentimes, you know, the first thing to go is the logo and the business name. And, and packaging as well. If your packaging
is that's true.
Right.
It's very true. I mean, I go to all the, you know, the trade shows in the industry, and you do see a lot of similar packaging for certain products that are similar. And sometimes, you know, one company has taken over another one, but I don't mean that. I mean something that's like, wow, that I thought that was the same booth. Nope, not the same booth, two different companies. And the packaging and the logo and the colors are so similar. I don't know. I don't know why anybody would do that. You know, I guess they're just trying to maybe broaden their coattails. But I think, you know, it's really important for people to do their due diligence. Hire a lawyer, you know, make sure all the things are put in the row properly and get your copyright, your trademark, your register, everything done. So you don't ever have to worry about that. I mean, that's just, it's such a nightmare, especially like if you are 10, 20 years in or whatever it is, even if you're 5 years in and now you're well known and now you have this problem. It's a huge expense, and, you know, if you have to rebrand and all of that, it's just going to cost you more money in the end.
Right. Honestly, I have seen so many unfortunate situations. By the time the clients come to me, it's really just too late. They either wait or they try to do it themselves, and, you know, there's some intricate areas, obviously, of the law, or else we wouldn't have
exactly,
you know, 3 years of schooling and everything else. So, you know, it may look easy, and sometimes maybe it is easy, but not all the time. And the question you really need to ask yourself is it really worth me trying to save some money in the beginning and then end up spending a lot more at the end?
Right, right. Well, is there anything else that you think of that I didn't ask for pet professionals to know about copyright, trademark, and registration? Law that you've seen or come across?
Actually, yes. So I would really caution against signing any sort of contracts without having someone review it for you, someone professional to review it for you, because I have seen a lot of times that you would be transferring over your intellectual property rights to something that you're either working on. Let's say you design packages for a pet business, right? You could be transferring that over, even if you didn't intend to, even if they're telling you upfront that, oh, you can keep the copyright to that, and then you just sign off all your rights. Or, you know, for trademarks as well, you may end up selling your name when you don't want to. A lot of things like that has happened, so I would caution against signing documents that you don't fully understand or, you know, don't really have the time to review. Have someone look at it before you sign.
I agree, definitely. And, you know, I know we kind of touched upon this in the beginning of the call, but if somebody was hiring yourself or another trademark lawyer to get their, you know, everything done, about how long would you say it would take? Because I know you have to do a lot of research on your end on the name and the classes and what are they trademarking, if they have products, if they're doing a slow. I mean, I know there's a little bit, like you said, it's intricate and there's a lot of work involved. How long would it take? You know, a month, a couple of weeks? I have no idea.
Sure. So the entire trademark process from the time you put in your application or the USPTO to the time that it registered, let's say without any incidents in between, it can take up to 18 months. So it's a very long process.
Wow.
The quickest I have ever seen is 10 months, 10 and a half months, something around there. So it's a very long process. And the USPTO doesn't even look at an application for the first 3 months. So it's literally just sitting there. And then when they do get to it, it's a very slow process. So
it can
take a while. But the good news is that they operate on the first-in-time basis. So if you're the first one to put in an application.
Put it in, got you. Uh-huh.
Right. Then you'll be better off from the second.
So if I had a pet professional that put in an app, you know, had hired somebody, they put the application in today for that trademark to be registered, and tomorrow somebody else put it in with the same name, the person that did it today would be protected first. They would get it first.
Right. If it's for the same name and the same class.
Right, right. Okay, so that's good to know, because I'm sitting here thinking, well, if it's 18 months, how do you know? So that makes a lot of sense.
Right.
That's great. And, you know, I think that a lot of people, when they're starting out in the pet industry, they don't think of these things as like, oh, well, I have this great idea, you know. And my first thing is don't tell everybody your idea, because somebody's going to take
right.
that from you.
Right.
You know, I've had a few people that I'm like, no, stop telling everybody. That is a really good idea. Stop telling everybody, you know, get everything together. Once you launch, then, you know, make sure you've already started the copyright and the registration process, so you don't have
exactly.
to worry about that. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think, you know, people get excited and they want to talk to everybody about it, and they, you know, have this new idea and they just put it out there. And I would caution people, you know, in this day and age of social media and everything being out there and people stealing stuff all the time, that if you have a great idea, wait until you have everything done properly. And of course, you know, it's tough to tell people to wait because they're so excited about it, but they need
right.
to wait. You know, I definitely think so.
What I tell my potential clients, or, you know, people who ask me, you know, to tell them about what they should be doing, is the first person you should talk about after your immediate family members is a lawyer, because
yeah.
because someone else really could be stealing your ideas. If not for themselves, they can go and tell a friend.
Right, and it might be totally innocent, you know. It could be
right.
somebody saying, oh, my God, I had this meeting the other day with this great, you know, they have this great idea, and they could just be telling their friend in passing, and then their friend might be like, wow, well, I'm going to take that idea. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
The person you're telling might not be doing it, but they might accidentally tell somebody else, and then, bam, there goes your idea. So
yep.
I see that all the time. I mean, on a weekly basis, somebody's telling me something, and I'm like, no, don't tell everybody what you want to do, you know. I said that unless they're really trusted, confidential people, like you said, your family members or your lawyer, but I definitely think
right.
people
even
should
if,
wait.
Even if you're hiring someone to, let's say, develop your product, let's say it needs to be manufactured somewhere, there needs to be a non-disclosure agreement between
yes.
you two, but that's a completely separate topic.
Totally, yep, I agree. So non-disclosures are important, and a lot of people don't realize, you know, that they need that. So that's something that they can look into. Well, thank you so much, Sharina, for your time. If there's anything else that you have to add, please let me know before we go.
Okay. Actually, I think we covered pretty much the basics. So I think we're good.
Yeah.
But if you have any other questions, or if your listeners have any other questions, you know, I'm very easy to reach. So just shoot me an email or call me.
Yeah, and I'm going to put all of Sharina's contact information within the blog post of this teleseminar. So I would definitely recommend reaching out to her if you're a pet professional, if you have a great idea and you want to be protected. Again, thank you so much for your time today, Sharina. I definitely learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to talking to you more in the future.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
All right. You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
The moderator has left the conference.